Good morning. It is Sunday, May 19th, 2013. This is Weekend Ozarks at Large. I'm Christina Thomas.
And I'm Kyle Kellums. Ahead on this edition of Ozarks, an app that could help doctors save a life. Plus, new ways to shop make it easier for consumers, but could also make it easier for those who steal. And Christina and I will talk about what we've learned this week.
But first, there was a lot of news about community this week. New ways to find out things to do in the community. Plus, a couple of ways of getting around the community. Ozarks at Large's Timothy Dennis has more in this week's Week in Review.
A bite-sized film fest is coming to Eureka Springs next month. Jacqueline Wolven, the director of the Eureka Springs Downtown Network, says that the 5-Minute Film Fest will be part of the monthly Fun After Five event on the fourth Friday.
And in June, we are focusing on film. So the idea is that filmmakers, both novice and professional, can create a film that's less than 5 minutes, including credits, and submit it to the festival. As long as they're family friendly, they'll all be shown.
Wolven says that although the fest has only been announced for a few days, she has received quite a bit of feedback from potential participants.
We've gotten a lot of calls and a lot of emails from people who are interested in the concept. They want to know if it was a film that they created before, if it fits in the time frame, could it be submitted? And the answer is yes. Right now, the rule is that you have to have someone who lives in Arkansas be affiliated with the film, either the director or the actors or something. Somebody has to be from Arkansas. We had a lot of calls from outside the areas asking to be in, but we decided to have some sort of geographic boundary.
For instructions on submitting a video, visit eurekaspringsdowntown.com/film-fest. Another city promotion organization in the area made news this past week. At a noon event Monday inside the Fayetteville Visitors Bureau, the Fayetteville Advertising and Promotion Commission unveiled a new website, which is a tool that Marilyn Hefner, executive director of the AMP Commission, says is a crucial tool for attracting visitors to the city.
As you all know, the website and the visitor guides are the entry point for the thousands of people who want to experience Fayetteville each year, both locals and visitors. And they download our material from the website, and more than 135,000 people visited the website last year. So we really want to put our best foot forward, and updating these experience points is vital to the marketing of the city of Fayetteville.
The new website at experiencefayetteville.com has been overhauled with a new appearance and a new backend that will simplify the process of updating content, making for a potentially more dynamic experience for visitors on the web. In addition to the website unveiling, the event marked the debut of the 2013 Fayetteville Insider's Guide, the visitor's brochure for the city and surrounding areas.
This year we've highlighted not only the restaurants, which we've been doing in the past, but we've also highlighted the farmers markets in Northwest Arkansas, at least in Benton and Washington counties, and we've included a harvest calendar. So if you want to know when the corn's going to be ready, you can look right in the visitor guides and as well as that. And we've also featured the microbreweries in the guide. We have expanded now. We're going to have 5 in July. So I think that's an important part of the growth of tourism through Northwest Arkansas.
Along with the featured breweries and guide to area farmers markets, the 2013 guide features profiles of area business leaders, restaurateurs, and others, including Hannah Withers of Little Bread Company and Maxine's Tap Room, Wendy Poole of the Ozark Literacy Council, Razorback basketball coach Mike Anderson, Sherry Bond of the Fayetteville Underground, and Joe Giles, a local musician and executive director of Bikes, Blues, and Barbecue. Speaking of Fayetteville, another trail connection is coming soon to Lake Fayetteville, specifically in the northwest corner of the lake. Matt Mihailovich, the city's trails coordinator, says that when the section stretching between the marina and the North Shore Disc Golf Course is complete, the entire paved loop will fit nicely into other paved trail developments at the lake.
We just completed and actually are having a ribbon cutting on Saturday for the southern section. That's about a 1-mile piece. That was our final phase of the paved loop. It completes the paved loop, but we still had this section on the north, but in the marina where it was shared with the roadway, which worked for the time being, but with the amount of use that we're seeing out there, it's just tremendous amount of use on these trails. We just feel like this is a great opportunity to pull the people away from the road and make it a little bit safer.
Mihailovich says that separating bike and pedestrian traffic from car traffic just makes sense. As more of the loop around the lake has been paved, more people are consequently using the trails.
as we've seen, the more phases get connected. And now with the loop complete, before people had to turn around if they wanted to stay on the paved surface, and now they can come around back to Veterans Park and complete that loop. We are counting out there, and we're just seeing really, really high counts of use, and which is great. People are loving it.
The new trail connection is being paid for in part by a $75,000 federal grant announced by the Arkansas Highway Transportation Department earlier in the week. Mihaljevic says that the trail will take about 4 months to complete, but construction won't likely begin until early 2014. On another alternative transportation note, Ozark Regional Transit will begin offering extended hours on many of its transit routes in Washington and Benton counties. Many routes that currently end at 5:30 or 6 p.m. will run until 7 or 7:30. Joel Gardner, general manager of Ozark Regional Transit, says that the extended hours come as a result of several cost-cutting measures, including ending the Saturday service, which cost about $46,000 or more annually.
We were providing this service for only a few people, and it was costing us an exorbitant amount of money. Our normal cost per trip is right around $2 per trip, and on these Saturdays, it was up to almost $20 per trip. So we canceled that particular service on Saturdays because I saw that it was money that was not being spent wisely. We regrouped, looked at the savings, and found out, yes, the community wants us to apply our savings into areas that make a difference, and extending hours during the weekday makes a difference.
Affected routes with end times between 7 and 7:30 include routes 40 through 47. Additionally, Route 54, which is the commuter route between Fayetteville and Bentonville, will run later into the evening, a move that Gardner says will benefit students of both the University of Arkansas and Northwest Arkansas Community College.
People that are running joint classes with two universities, it enables them to get up to the later classes in the evening and get themselves back onto their primary campus down at Fayetteville. Or if they're using the park and ride facility that is up at Springdale NWAC campus, they can get back and forth. NWAC campuses don't close until about 9 o'clock. We're leaving there right around 9:10, 9:15 for our last pull of the evening to get any final students back down into the Springdale-Fayetteville area.
Gardner says that the extended hours will begin tomorrow. For more information, visit ozark.org. In the Harold and Blanche Kalk News Studio, I'm Timothy Dennis, and this is Weekend Ozarks at Large.
As the temperatures warm and layers of clothing come off, our skin begins to show. Many people may notice strange bumps or moles that have grown from last summer. Fitting that May is Skin Cancer Awareness Month. Earlier this month, a group of doctors at Ozark Dermatology Clinic in Fayetteville rolled out a new online dermatology app, just in time for Melanoma Monday last Monday. About 30% of dermatologists in Arkansas came on board to diagnose skin issues of about 100 patients across the state. I mean, we use our smartphones for everything else. Why not for healthcare? The idea for the app was about 4 years in the making. It began with a website, the Online Dermatology Clinic, which really came about, says Dr. Christopher Schock, out of frustrations of being a dermatologist.
One of the frustrations in our practice, and with every dermatologist, that we hear from our patients is how long it takes to get in to be seen, because there's a relatively few number of dermatologists. And so that's one problem. The other problem is in medical training, only dermatologists really get trained to examine the skin and to diagnose the skin. And so primary care doctors don't have that much background in it. So we came up with an idea of how to share information with primary care doctors, give access to our patients, give more expedited access to patients. And so we thought, why don't we use our computers and smartphones? And so we created a whole video tutorial program where we have doctors teaching patients with videos online. And then over time, we just kind of together developed the idea of using teledermatology.
The photographs with smartphones are so good now. Dr. Schock says that when properly trained, a dermatologist can diagnose a problem with a picture in about 80 to 90% of cases. He likens it to me going to a basketball game.
if you were to go to Bud Walton Arena and your aunt was there, I wouldn't know who she was, but you'd know her as soon as you'd pick her out of the crowd of 17,000. You know exactly what she looks like, and it's the same thing for a dermatologist. You know, when you see a rash or a skin cancer, for the most part, it's instant recognition, and so that's why teledermatology works so well.
As Dr. Schock mentioned earlier, it takes a while to get into a dermatologist. There are so few, partly due to the extensive training the specialization requires. After 4 years of medical school, there's 1 year of training in general medicine, then 3 more years to train in dermatology. He says the app serves as teletriage to determine if a patient needs to come in, if at all, and get the patients that need to come in quickly.
You know, there are cases where people have melanoma and go for months waiting to be seen. And by the time they finally get in, that cancer can be more advanced. And in some places, the wait is over 6 months to see a dermatologist, and that's unacceptable. I guarantee you, if that doctor had known that a patient had a melanoma, that person would not wait 6 months. The doctors want those patients seen more quickly, and this is a triage, an effective way to triage patients and get them in.
Early detection is key in curing melanoma and other skin cancers. If found early, they say the cure rate is almost 100% with minor procedures. But once it breaks free from the skin, the 5-year survival rate is low. Here's Dr. Eric Stewart on melanoma.
Of course, there's different kinds with different levels of severity, and of course, the most serious type being melanoma. And bad thing about melanoma a lot of times is it's asymptomatic. It doesn't hurt. It doesn't itch many times, and people don't realize that something that's so asymptomatic could be such a problem. And so the ability to see more melanomas and more unusual moles through this system, hopefully if we can just catch a few of these, that someone who doesn't have time to come into clinic or is nervous about coming into the doctor, if we can just catch a few of these this way, then it would be worth it.
The doctors diagnosed at least 4 cases of skin cancer in the week leading up to Melanoma Monday through use of the app, and they're still waiting for more statistics to come in. In preparation for my interview with the doctors, Dr. Schock suggested I download the free online Derm Clinic app and try it out, just to see how easy it is to use. It was easy. I had to create an account, which didn't take long. Dr. Schock had given me a promo code, because there is a fee, but it's similar to the copay at most doctor's offices. I was able to choose my doctor, and I chose Dr. Schock. It's best to find one in your area. Then I took a picture. At first, I wasn't sure that I had anything that needed to be checked out. Then I remembered a small pinkish bump on my chest that had actually been drawing my attention for a few months. I took 3 pictures of it in my bathroom, late on a Sunday evening, and submitted them. When I arrived to my desk on Monday morning, Dr. Schock had sent a response to my email inbox. Here's what it looked like from his end.
Right, so this is the doctors have their own end where they log into it, okay? So it's separate from the patient end. So I'm going to go ahead and get into the chart. I'm going to go to your report, because that one, this is your medical record, so you get to see it. But this is our view. And so we've got these buttons on this side that have function, tell the doctor what they can do with this. When they see the report, they have different functions. They can send a report. They can send it with a disclaimer, which is what we sent you, saying that, hey, this looks worrisome. You're going to need to be evaluated in person. There'll be a diagnosis, too, that you get to read about, but this is a disclaimer letting the patient know that, trying to emphasize the fact that this may be a skin cancer.
Kind of scary, right? Dr. Schock says all of this information is stored on HIPAA-secured servers.
And there's your information, and here are the images we get to see. We have this nice little tool that zooms your image. You can see this, in your case, is this little pink little bump, kind of a nondescript pink bump, and then I can read your history that you say that it's been present for a few months.
It's pretty high tech. The doctors worked with high tech people in developing this program. Here's Dr. Stewart and Dr. Kevin St. Clair on how easy it is for the doctors to use.
And the ease of, for the doctor of making this work was really his work. I mean, Chris did such a good job of storyboarding this to make each button intuitive and work properly to come out smoothly for the doctor as well as the patient. So
the patient is notified the report is ready via email. They'll get to receive an email saying, hey, your report's ready. You'll sign in. You also have the opportunity to ask questions. If you have a question, you can ask the doctor. The doctor will receive an email and can respond through the site via email.
I didn't have any questions because I knew I'd be in that day, though I was not prepared to be taken into the exam room. But that's exactly where Dr. Schock led me. I sat in a fancy new chair under those big bright lights and let him check me out. The app eliminates some of that intimidation because many cases can be solved via the app.
So there are a couple different things that can do that.
Okay.
One of them is called a Spitz nevus. It's a type of a mole. Usually Spitz nevi are removed. We actually surgically excise them because a very small percentage of Spitz nevi can actually be skin cancer, in fact, be melanoma type skin cancer. And so when we're looking at things like this, we want to think, okay, what's worst case scenario? We don't want to miss something, right? Do no harm. So when you have a little nondescript little pink bump that's relatively new, not going away, it's not a pimple, it's not a ruptured cyst, those should go away in a couple of weeks. In this case, you do need a little skin biopsy there.
And so he biopsied it. I'll get my results next week. The doctors say they had a good time developing the program and learning about the technology side of it. But their favorite part is the first-of-its-kind humanitarian aspect of it. Things like Melanoma Monday. But also, a local pediatric clinic will be going to parts of Mexico this summer, and they'll be using it. They'll be sending images to the United States, here in Fayetteville, to solve problems in Mexico.
You know, one of the things that all of us do when we get out in medicine is, you know, we want to, you know, make a difference. You're trying to help people.
To get started, from your computer, go to onlinedermclinic.com. From your smartphone, download the free Online Derm Clinic app from iTunes or Google Play.
This is Ozarks at Large. New in-store retail technologies such as self-scan, which interfaces with self-checkout, are transforming how we shop. But they also present new opportunities for thieves. Ozarks at Large's Jacqueline Froelich has this report.
The sounds of a traditional checkout experience. Clerks ring up your purchase, bag your items, take your money. But now, more shoppers are checking out at automated self-serve kiosks.
Please select from popular items or look up items alphabetically.
And certain mass merchant retailers are experimenting with do-it-yourself scanners via mobile handheld store devices or personal smart devices. Walmart's testing Scan and Go.
It really is simple. You just use your phone to scan the product barcode and then bag your item.
Scan and Go web promotion makes it sound easy, but it's a little tricky. First, you need newer generation devices to allow the auto locate to launch the in-store mode. Tap the green shopping cart icon, then the scan key. That activates the camera function used to scan package barcodes, and certain bagged items require smushing to get a clear read. It takes a little effort to focus the barcode properly for it to scan, and small products are easy, but larger, heavy ones, like square juice bottles.
You need almost two hands to do this. You have to set the product down and hold the phone and center it over the top until it's in focus.
Scan products appear as a pictorial list with a running cost tally. You bag items into your cart as you go. When finished, you roll up to the self-checkout lane, tap the transfer scan and go icon on the register screen, scan the QR code with your phone or device, which transfers the mobile contents to the computer register. Tap finish, swipe your credit card, and you're done. The receipt appears on your device, saving paper. Last year, a Walmart executive was reported saying that repurposing associates away from cashiers will save the company $12 million in wages every second. But the question is, how much money will retailers lose due to malicious theft associated with these new technologies? Vishwanath Venkatesh, a distinguished professor at the University of Arkansas Walton College of Business, is researching mobile self-checkout risks.
We've understood about the process, whereas before, the scanning of the items, the payment, and this departure from the store was all taking place at the same time. Now it's separated in time and space. Scanning can take place somewhere else at some other time. Payment can take place, and then you're leaving the store. And so there needs to be a process for what we've called validation.
Proving that patrons are walking out with stolen inventory, what industry refers to as shrink, and stealing has spiked in recent years. According to the Global Retail Theft Barometer, shrink saw an annual increase in 2011 of 6.6% among North American retailers, costing companies more than $45 billion. Dr. Venkatesh's research data is being gathered from in-store shopper surveys and focus groups comprised of shoplifters, which fall into three broad categories: cash-strapped first-time offenders who steal on a whim, professional shoplifters who steal for resale, and kleptomaniacs.
Customers feel that video and the store employees, the combination of the video and the store employees, would be the two most effective deterrents. Shoplifters actually feel that video and registration with the store in order to use the mobile devices, because that means they're identified. So they feel that those two are the most effective deterrents. Because I think part of it is that they've found their ways around store employees. They know where to look for them and they know how to deal with them. Whereas the customers, the average customers may feel that, well, store employees are going to be effective in being deterred. So video and store registration seem like they would be the most effective.
A repurposed cashier placed on store floors to stock inventory could also serve as a theft deterrent, watching out for patrons who might be fake mobile scanning items to secret past self-checkout. Some retailers have reportedly removed self-checkout lanes from stores due to increased theft, but Walmart's installing 10,000 new lanes this year, tooling up three-quarters of the company's 4,000 U.S. stores for self-service shopping.
Unexpected item in bagging area. Remove this item before continuing.
NCR Corporation, based in Georgia, is installing the self-checkout lanes, and StopLift Checkout Vision Systems, based in Massachusetts, is providing security solutions to NCR. StopLift CEO and founder Malloy Kundu.
Self-checkout lanes, and it varies by store and store format, but we've seen literally as much as five times higher scan avoidance or theft at self-checkout lanes as compared to man checkout lanes.
Via weightless theft.
So leaving items in the cart, scanning it or pretending to scan it, but then putting it in a bag, which they bag onto the floor, or they hold it so that it doesn't actually put its weight down onto the weight sensor.
Thieves also type in cheap codes for expensive items or simply walk away from the kiosk to the nearest exit when no one's looking. But StopLift Checkout Vision Systems provides real-time video surveillance above the checkout lane, showing a clear view of fraudulent behavior.
So essentially, it can see that, I had this steak that I pretended to scan, didn't actually scan, and then, I stuck it directly back into the cart.
When a questionable move is detected, the conveyor locks up and issues an alert. A trained clerk is dispatched to politely investigate. Security is brought in if evidence warrants.
Unexpected item in bagging area. Remove this item before. Please wait while we verify your bags.
Malloy Kundu says checkout aisles are packed with activity, so video surveillance is critical to loss prevention. And to meet growing demand, StopLift has just rolled out new technology to speed up self-checkouts.
Using the same technology that we can use to detect theft, we can actually use it now to reduce the number of false alerts.
Triggered by a wallet or keys placed on a scale, for example. And with more mobile self-scanning consumers queuing up to self-checkout, reduced false alerts will be critical. But what theft deterrent will work best to reduce scan-and-go type theft?
Really, the best thing that retailers can do today to deter theft for mobile checkout type systems is really to do audits of some sort at the point of exit.
Less cashiers could mean more clerks at retail store exits. In the meantime, Malloy Kundu and his team at Stoplift plan to release a mobile self-checkout theft solution soon.
Many retailers around the U.S. Cite mobile engagement with customers as one of their highest priorities.
Dr. John Aloysius, who is collaborating with Vishwanath Venkatesh, says mobile point-of-sale technology will only proliferate. As for using smartphone apps like Scan & Go, Dr. John Aloysius says it's not on thieves' radar yet.
But one thing that they assured me was that it wouldn't take them long. So therefore, while they might be reluctant to venture into something new, once they did have the information, they were not shy about saying, yes, we'll figure it out.
Independent research indicates that a majority of shoppers perceive stores with mobile scan and self-checkout technologies as catering to customer preferences. And early research indicates young people, families, and certain middle-aged shoppers tend to use it the most. Along with Walmart, Home Depot, Lowe's, and CVS, a southern supermarket chain, are installing self-checkouts. East Coast supermarket chain Giant Eagle has discovered a handy theft deterrent, requiring customers to use a store loyalty card to self-checkout. Fraud can be easily traced that way. And Dr. John Aloysius says JCPenney's experimenting with something entirely new.
They're looking at models where store employees have iPads or iPods, and they walk the store, and they can help someone to check out anywhere on the floor.
Discount supply chain retailers were looking toward passive RFID tags, radio frequency identification chips, to electronically track store items. The cost of so many tags has remained a barrier. But once enabled, RFID could reduce retail theft to almost nothing. One high-end jeweler reported testing item-level RFID tags during a chaotic holiday season. The tags completely eliminated theft and drastically reduced inventory labor. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Jacqueline Froelich.
We are well into the Walton Arts Center's Artisphere, and there is art both indoor and out. Stacy Levy, whose work is a mixture of nature, art, and sustainability, has a new installation at Lake Fayetteville, Spiral Wetland. It extends about 100 feet, but if unraveled, would be close to 750 linear feet. The artist says the work is best viewed from the boat dock or the dam. Ozarks at Large's Antoinette Grajeda visited with the artist at the work site for a daily edition of Ozarks at Large. Here's her report.
This is the best site ever. This lake is fabulous because it's so well visited. I have this wonderful audience that's passing by all the time, rain and shine. And people who come by frequently, like dog walkers who are here every day, joggers who this is their route. So they get to see it change over time, because I always like an audience that's somewhat consistent, like working at a bus stop is always good too. And so this is a great kind of rolling past audience. What I really like is to build a piece that people who didn't expect to see art get to see it as they go past. And because I don't always get to galleries, I don't expect people who aren't artists to make it to galleries. So having this really high view is really interesting. We're about, 20 feet, 18 feet up from the bank. So it was designed for this view, for bikers and for, and there's some now, and people strolling with their kids and baby carriages and people walking their dogs. That audience is really great. But I also have a whole boat audience, too. People in kayaks, fishermen can all see it from the ground story, not the second floor view. And so that's really interesting, too. And they're both two very different views. Even though it was designed for this, it's really nice when you're actually in the water. And after building it, one of the things I discovered was that spiraling in with your kayak it's a very special space in there. It gets very quiet. And it's quite congested. You have to have a small kayak to do it. But it's a really interesting space, and it was something I hadn't expected. So you don't always know what you're going to get when you build something, which is the excitement of building this kind of work.
Well, why as an artist did you want to, you know, have that marriage, like you said, of the art and nature and sustainability? Why are those aspects as an artist that you wanted to incorporate just, I guess, into all of your art, really?
Yeah, that's, well, it has been in all my art. I actually started out as a urban forester I actually majored in art and minored in forestry because I wanted somehow to bring natural process into action and into view, because I really love nature and I'm very interested in how it works. But it's not that it's confusing, but it's something, those processes are something that we don't think about all that often. So I want to bring very simple processes into the fore, into people's vision. So that's always been a big reason why I do the kind of work I do. And I used to do work that was more what I consider more like a noun. It was the thing. I would show what frog eggs look like, or I would show what was going on in water. But now I'm doing work that's more like a verb, that's actually encapsulating a process and trying to sort of harness it and make it happen through the art piece. And the art piece becomes a registration of something that's happening. And in this piece, it even takes it to one step beyond the verb. It's trying to be a sort of helpful verb. It's trying to change the situation, because there's so many things that are problematic with nature. Nature has a hard time in this world and in our man-made variety of the world. And so I'm trying to make very, very small but meaningful solutions to some of those problems. This spiral wetland actually will clean the water. It will draw in the nutrients there are too many nutrients that have flowed into this lake. There's a lot of nitrogen and a lot of phosphorus. It's rolling off of people's lawns. It's rolling off of if there's any farmland on the surroundings of here. And it's not buffered by wetlands. So I'm creating a kind of buffer zone. It's taking place out there. And it also makes really great habitat for fish, because they love to have a little shade. And there's the dangling roots create a kind of like forested area for fish to hang out in. So this will be, it's good for fish and it's good for cleaning the water. Now, it's not going to clean the entire lake. That's not going to be a noticeable change, because you'd probably need 50 of these to do it. But I'm not an engineer. I'm an artist. And so I introduce the idea that there is a solution, and the solution can be really interesting and really beautiful. And here it is. And sort of now engineers and people who create infrastructure can kind of deal with this as a possibility for green infrastructure and think, okay, we could put these out in the lake. We could clean the water. It gives them the sense that there is a possibility, and it doesn't have to be kind of ugly and all perpendicular. It can have some really beautiful forms that you can enjoy while it's solving the problem.
Well, I do want to ask you about the form of the insulation. It's a spiral. Is there any significance to that?
Oh, it's a heavy significance. I was very motivated by an artist named Robert Smithson, who did Spiral Jetty. It's the iconic piece of Earthworks. And I've seen it in, I've never seen it live, but I've seen it in a million different portrayals photographically. And whenever there was an article written about me, there was always a picture of the spiral jetty, because that's sort of like where I have come from in a certain way. I'm out of that tradition. And I always thought, well, I'm not really making that kind of work in a certain way. I don't make giant marks in the landscape in that kind of form. So I thought I needed to revisit Smithson and figure out what it is about the jetty that's very compelling, but also what it is that isn't working for me. And it's an extraordinary piece. It's nearly impossible to get to. I'm a testament to that. I've never been there myself. I mean, you can, but it's not something you cross over in your everyday, unless you happen to fly over it. And so I like to work in sites where there's lots, where people are going to come across it without meaning to. Also, it's basically a bulldozed long jetty way out into the Salt Lake. And I think it's an extraordinarily beautiful piece, but I also feel like now art needs to do a little bit more than just be a beautiful mark. It needs to have an effect, if it can have an effect, or it needs to suggest the possibility of effect. And so I wanted to turn that mark into something that worked. It's really a working earthwork. And it's doing a little work. It's showing that there's solutions to water pollution, and that they can be very beautiful. And it's not just sitting out there ethereally. So it's kind of like a very pragmatic spiral jetty.
Well, what kind of plants are out there?
There is a native rush called Juncus effusus, that's soft rush, and that it's completely planted with that. I wanted a monoculture in this case because the juncus would grow in a long monocultural band along the shoreline if this was a natural lake.
What are the plants sitting in? What is that material?
It's not unlike a gym mat or a yoga mat. It's a closed cell foam, and it's a very inert and long-lasting kind of foam. And the plants are sitting, it's kind of been Swiss cheesed with a whole series of perforations, and the plants are in special pots that fit into those holes with special little clips that hold them in. So you pop the plants that are wrapped in coir. They're wrapped like a kind of a little plant burrito to fit in the pot, and then this the whole thing slips into the hole and snaps in. It's a snap-on plant.
Okay. And then it's anchored down.
And then the entire piece is anchored with about, well, we probably have about 17 to 22 anchors out there now. And that's what the scuba divers are working on, getting our anchors perfectly aligned. So it's anchored and floating at the same time, not unlike a moored boat.
What challenges have you faced in putting this together? I imagine weather has been an issue, because I think one of the first days you were out here, it was supposed to be cold and raining, so I didn't even know if you got to start on the date you were meant to start on, and then it snowed.
We actually made a really great snowman that was rolled, all the snow was rolled off of this and ended up in a snowman in the middle of the spiral. Mike made that for us. And it was good because its stick arms were holding a sign that was telling the volunteers that if they turned up in this weather, they should go over to the Walton Arts Center and we'd be working there. So when you work outside, you can get any kind of weather. I'd rather cold than hot, so I was perfectly happy. The snow was a little iffy because we needed the ground. The biggest thing is wind. It's much easier to work on this when it's calmer. And so that's always been the issue. But, you know, I've decided I wanted to work with nature. I kind of have to work with whatever I get.
And it officially is officially unveiled, officially done on the 18th?
It is officially unveiled on the 18th, indeed. But it will, I mean, it's the way it looks right now, this is what it's going to look like. And the only thing that's going to really change is that plants will grow over time. And also one of the exciting things is with temporary pieces, you can end up with a whole lot of trash that you have to take down after you take it down that you have to dispose of. But this was very intentionally designed to be sustainable. Oh, look at all the sandpipers out there now. So it's when it comes down, we're going to tow it in and pull up all the anchors, and then we will section out pieces, whatever people want, and people can pick up pieces that they want and truck them to their own ponds and wetlands and golf course ponds and retention basins. Whatever has water in it every day, it's not just seasonal water, can take one of these, and you could anchor it or you could just let it float free. But it will have, each of these pieces will have a second home. So the plants will have a more permanent home after Lake Fayetteville.
What are you hoping that people will take away from this installation?
I hope that they can see that art and nature and science can kind of hold hands and have a better relationship, and that engineering and engineered solutions can get more graceful and more aesthetic, and that art can be part of every solution that we create in water and on land, so that this infrastructure that we make is going to be a lot more sympathetic to how nature works and a lot more sympathetic to our eyes. Not everything has to be perpendicular and 4x8 and look really like it's working. It can look beautiful while it's working.
Ozarks at Large's Antoinette Grajeda filed that report for a daily edition of Ozarks at Large earlier this week.
One night after playing a gig, musician Amanda Palmer was signing autographs.
And a guy comes up to me and hands me a $10 bill. He says, "I'm sorry, I burned your CD from a friend. I just want you to have this money." And this is the moment I decide I'm just going to give away my music for free.
I'm Guy Raz, giving it all away. That's next time on the TED Radio Hour from NPR.
The TED Radio Hour coming up today at noon here on KUAF.
And this is Weekend Ozarks at Large. We, the Ozarks at Large staff, cover a lot of things in the course of 7 days.
We sure do.
And we learn some things along the way.
We learn a lot of things.
So we thought on these Sunday shows, we'd tell you just a couple of things we learned. Some you may have heard on Daily Ozarks at Large. Some maybe from stories. And we didn't have time to put the facts in that we wanted to. So
and you may know them.
Right.
The listeners may have already known them. But
it's something we learned.
Right.
So what is something you learned this weekend?
Well, I did a story on the 75th birthday of Ozarks Electric Cooperative Corporation.
Yes.
And I always knew that a co-op meant that it was member owned. And, you know, and I'm a member. I get a check each year. But I never really understood why it started that way. And as it turns out, there's a really good reason for it. It wasn't economically feasible for private companies to do the lines out to rural areas. And so they actually had to go out to these rural areas and penny storms with Ozarks Electric. And Burl Wilkie, who used to work for Ozarks Electric, and actually he remembers, he grew up without electricity, and he remembers when Ozark Electric came to his house. So here's a little bit of our conversation.
It was a matter of going around to houses and signing up and saying, if we had electricity out here, would you sign up? Would you pay $5 to become a member? They had to get signatures on paper and $5 paid to get electricity brought to them and to get the money from REA.
I can remember when that happened at my house, that the guy came around. We had thought that it would still be forever before we could get electricity, and this guy came along. The guy, he eventually was my foreman at work, but he would just be going around soliciting membership at that time. And he had to really kind of talk my dad into putting up the $5 because he didn't really have an extra $5 just to give somebody and never see anything come back from it or whatever. But then we were not sure we could pay even the minimum electric bill every month either, but we went ahead and signed up. And
it was this week that Ozarks Electric celebrated its 75th anniversary. You had that story. Funny that something you learned about was about electricity. Something I learned this week was from Timothy Dennis's story about some art that's taking place in the square. And this is a little bit more abstract, but I learned that you can make electric utility boxes into a work of art that blend in with gardens. Timothy Dennis talked with Jason Jones, an artist who's making that conversion on the Fayetteville Square.
So that one's the lace wing. I don't know how garden friendly. I guess you can see it better from around the corner. There's a Luna moth, which they're just really pretty. So I don't know how protective of gardens they are. And then around the corner over here, there's a monarch butterfly. And I did a ladybug. I guess they're very garden friendly. They eat the bad insects.
On Monday's edition of Ozarks at Large, I had a honey tasting with Don Steinkraus, and other members of our staff joined us. And I always knew that, you know, you have clover honey, there's buckwheat honey, lavender honey, and the honeys, you know, that they get, the honeys get their names because that's where the pollen comes from,
right,
that the bees make the honey. I did not know that bees could make honey from something that isn't pollen.
I didn't know that either.
So, Don Steinkraus.
It's made from, like, when aphids and scale insects feed on a plant, it's got too much sucrose in it and not enough amino acids. So they have a special way of shunting the sugars out. And then the bees can gather these secretions from the homopterans and make it into honey.
And that type of honey is honeydew honey.
Just some of the things that we learned this week. And if we're doing a job, we and you will learn along with us every day on Daily Ozarks at Large, every day at noon and 7, Monday through Friday.
And Sunday mornings at 9.
Philip Glass's Heroes Symphony comes from the music of David Bowie and Brian Eno. He wrote the work in the 1990s. César Franck wrote his only major symphonic work, his Symphony in D minor, in 1888, and it was premiered in 1889, right before his death. Hi, I'm Katie Henriksen, host of the KUAF Sunday Symphony from 7 to 9 p.m. on KUAF Public Radio. Join me this Sunday for Philip Glass's Heroes Symphony and César Franck's Symphony in D minor. That's coming up Sunday night from 7 to 9 p.m. on your source for classical music, KUAF, and also streaming online at KUAF.com.
It is Sunday, May 19th, 2013. This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellum.
I'm Christina Thomas.
And on this Sunday morning, we welcome Becca Martin-Brown, features editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers, into our studio.
Good morning. You know how much I hate getting up, right?
Yeah.
I am so excited about this story.
Okay.
I could have been here 2 hours ago.
You would have been waiting outside a locked door,
yes,
but
yes,
go ahead.
I would have. But this is an incredibly cool story. Okay, what do you think of when you think of the Art Center of the Ozarks?
I think of the greatest Christmas pageant ever. Okay. I think of an art gallery. I think of those little stars that lead you into the front door.
I think Springdale.
Okay. Those are all good thoughts. What if I told you that they are going to do something that brings together a whole bunch of different kinds of art that, to the best of my knowledge, has never been done in Northwest Arkansas before?
That's exciting.
Eve Smith, who is their visual arts director, and Case DeGario.
Oh, I know what you're about to talk about.
Have come up with this plan.
Mm-hmm. You know I like food.
I do.
This is food and visual arts and spoken word.
Music.
And music. And let's see, there's one more. Acting.
Mm-hmm.
And film.
And paired up.
And all paired up. What they've done is come up with this partnership idea where a chef pairs up with an artist. Some of the artists are Brian Hembree and Threepenny Acre, and Jason Sewell, who's a performance artist, and Houston Hughes, who's a spoken word artist. And they're going to pair up with chefs and come up with a shared concept for a dish and a piece of art.
Oh, this totally sounds right up my alley.
Oh, it does. Awesome. So in August, the restaurants will have these dishes on their menu. That piece of art does not exist unless you order it.
Gotcha.
Eve Smith was very adamant. You do not make this unless somebody orders it.
Oh, wow.
Because that's part of the
process.
Art.
Right.
Now, we're trying to convince her that photos should be taken of that art.
I think so.
So it can hang in the gallery in September next to the art that's created.
Right.
And then, like, if Jason Sewell does a performance, they'll film that, and that'll be available to see. And the whole thing's going to be filmed by a student filmmaker who will then try to put something together like the Iconoclast show on Sundance.
Mm-hmm.
And all of this will take 2 months. You can eat it in August, see it in September. It's going to be really cool.
Sounds like a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm.
I cannot remember the last time somebody came up with something that exciting. So it's going to be really amazing. And you can find out more at the Art Center of the Ozarks.
Yes.
And this afternoon, speaking of art, there's a lecture by Peter John Brownlee, who is Associate Curator for the Terra Foundation for American Art and Curator of the exhibit American Encounters, Genre Painting in Everyday Life at 3 o'clock at Crystal Bridges. It's free for members and $10 for non-members.
Sounds like a lot of fun as well.
And, of course, the Block Street Block Party will be going on all afternoon.
Into the early evening hours, correct?
With music. I know Shaky Bugs is going to be there, and I can't remember who else, but all kinds of music.
Lots of music, all up and down the street, inside and outside,
I bet it's even longer and wider than it was last year, the second year.
Mm-hmm.
All right. On Block Avenue.
On Block Avenue in Fayetteville, and thank you for saying Avenue. It's one of those things that makes me twitch.
Thank you, Becca.
Becca Martin-Brown is features editor with Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
And as Becca mentioned just a moment ago to us, this is the day for the third annual Block Street Block Party. It's actually Block Avenue, but they call it Block Street Party because Block Street. And that inspired this week's montage, all about movies, television shows, songs that have to do with streets, avenues, boulevards. A couple of them are a little, I took some liberties, but see how many of these you can identify.
If you ever plan to motor west, travel my way, take the highway, that's the best. Get your kicks on Route 66.
I just want to tell you all how happy I am to be back in the studio, making a picture again. You don't know how much I've missed all of you. And I promise you I'll never desert you again. Because after Salome, we'll make another picture and another picture. You see, this is my life. It always will be. There's nothing else. Just us. And the cameras.
and those wonderful people out there in the dark. All right, Mr. DeMille, I'm ready for my close-up.
Is, ladies and gentlemen, that greed, for lack of a better word, is good.
Well, everybody better move over, that's all. 'Cause I'm running on the bad side and I got my back to the wall. Ten devil to freeze out. Ten devil to...
Let's roll. Hey, let's be careful out here.
Boogeyman?
No.
Whatever you do, don't fall asleep.
We're still great friends, but we have to go into later phases of our lives. So there he goes, Dean Moriarty, ragged in the moth-eaten overcoat he brought specially for the freezing temperatures of the East. Walking off alone, and last I saw him, he rounded the corner of 7th Avenue, eyes on the street ahead, and bent to it again.
Road again. Just can't wait to get on the road again. The life I love is making music with my friends. And I can't wait to get on the road again. On the road again.
To see a list of the 10 clips that were used in this week's montage, of course, you can go to OzarksAtLarge.com.
The KUAF website giveaway is offering a pair of tickets to the 10th anniversary Wakarusa Music Festival. It's May 30th through June 2nd. The winner will be announced on Friday, May 24th, during the noon edition of Ozarks at Large. Another giveaway includes tickets to the Country Music Festival Thunder on the Mountain. Separate registration for each is required. Registration is available online at KUAF.com.
This is KUAF 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Rogers, Road Ridge.
Okay.
Inspired by the montage. It was about roads. Road Ridge is not a community. It is literally a geological formation, a ridge that is located south of Waldron. It's inside the Ouachita National Forest. It's okay. Called Road Ridge.
But Waldron, people in Waldron are probably listening.
Oh, I hope.
Yeah.
I hope.
Yeah.
Scott County. We've got listeners in Scott County, of course.
You are hosting tomorrow's edition, daily edition of Ozarks at Large.
I am. Tomorrow, Randy Dixon, who's the director of the Pryor Center for Oral and Visual History, is back. He comes in once a month or so with some clips of oral history. And we focus on sports and Arkansas tomorrow. We're going to hear a clip from Brooks Robinson, recorded right after Brooksy had such a great World Series in 1970. We will hear from Frank Broyles soon after Lou Holtz had left. We'll also hear from President Nixon, recorded back in 1969, right after the Great Shootout, when Texas and Arkansas, number one and two in the country, played on national television. And President Nixon was in Fayetteville, and he's talking to the Razorback team after they've lost this heartbreaking game.
Well, I was going to ask what President Nixon had to do with Arkansas sports, but there you go.
There you go. So. We'll hear that, a little bit about tornadoes on tomorrow's show. And other things as well. That's tomorrow at noon.
Okay. Weekend. Ozarks at Large is a production of KUAF. I'm Christina Thomas.
I'm Kyle Kellums.
Thank you so much for listening.
And have a great Sunday, and talk to you next week.